Welcome to the Tribe of Testimonies. Here you will find conversations with faithful Native American members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, sharing their stories and their love of the Savior. My name's Andrea Hales. I'm Navajo, and I'm glad that you've decided to come and join us today.
Good day. So, today I have a guest on. His name is Terry Goodell. He is a Yakima Tulalip. He was enthusiastic. When I first reached out to him, I wanted to just schedule a time to see if this podcast would be a good thing for him, a good fit for both of us. So I called him. We finally worked that out. We called him and he's like, well, I'm ready to do it today. I'm ready to do it right now. And I'm like, oh, well, hold on. So 2 hours later, I finished some of the other things I needed to get done and we had our interview. I was so incredibly grateful for him. For those of you who have been following every week, I had three women in a row and I was ready to have a man guest again. And the man I had previously scheduled was unable to do an interview with me. So I was out and I needed a man. And I asked Heavenly Father and he sent Terry to me. And he just had so much enthusiasm. So I hope you get that as you listen to him today. And I hope you feel his spirit. Hello. Today I am here with Terry Goodell. He is on the phone. And I'd love if you would introduce yourselves for all the listeners, Terry.
My name is Terry Goodell. I'm a Yakima Tulalip Native American, originally from Washington State of sorts. The Yakima and Tulalip are from Washington State. I'm Yakima Tulalip, and I'm German. My father was a full-blooded German. My mother was a full-blooded Native American. My father grew up in Wadena, Minnesota, and my mother was from Tulalip, Washington, a small reservation north of Seattle and south of Vancouver, BC. Many years ago, the opportunity was provided by the Tulalip natives for people who were of Tulalip ancestry to change from one tribe to the Tulalip if they wanted to. And so half my family is registered as Tulalip and half of my family is registered as Yakima. So I'm a registered Yakima native, but I grew up on the Tulalip reservation.
Wow. I didn't know that history about those tribes either. Yeah. What is one of your favorite cultural celebrations or stories or traditions, something that you love about who you are, especially if it relates to the gospel of Jesus Christ?
My father and my mother took us around the country because he was in the Navy. Prior to my mother being sick, we kind of realized that we looked a little different than most of the community, but we never were really taught about our native heritage. So as we moved from place to place, we sensed that we were different somehow, but my mother really and my father never really talked about our native culture and who we were. We were living in Alaska, and I was a young teenager. One day, my brother was out in the woods, and he had gotten a new 22 for his birthday. He shot his gun, and as he shot his gun, immediately, simultaneously, my younger sister screamed. And when my younger sister screamed, I was in the house with my mom. And when she heard the shot and the scream, she was sure that somebody had just been shot.
Oh, yeah.
And she experienced a heart attack. My brother had shot the gun and my sister had been stung by a bee simultaneously.
Oh.
With that, my mother fell to her knees and fell to the ground. And I remember rushing over and, you know, "Mom, Mom, what's wrong, Mom?" And I watched her as the events kind of unfolded. They took her to the hospital and they gave her, I think it was a quadruple bypass. And the doctor said, "I'm giving you 5 years to live. Unless you go somewhere where it's warmer, you're not going to make it here in Alaska." So that was one of the events that sent us to return to the Tulalip Reservation, which is north of Seattle. So when I got there, I didn't know really anything about my native culture. My mom had, you know, told us a little bit about who we were, but it was very minimal. And when I got to the reservation, my eyes were open and I realized I had been living in a different world all my life. And I didn't understand my culture. I didn't know my language. My mother, I found out after we had lived there, we were at a Thanksgiving potluck at the tribal hall. And she saw one of her friends come in, and I remember her yelling across the room, and she yelled, "Chacha Moses," and chacha means holy. And she yelled, "Chacha Moses, chacha Moses." And I looked at her like, "What did you just say?" It was like the strangest thing that I had ever heard. And so they rushed and greeted each other and gave each other a hug, and they were talking. And she motioned for the kids to come over and be with her. So as we kind of went over to speak with her and meet whoever this was, she was standing there speaking this dying language called the Lushootseed language that she grew up speaking. And we had never heard her. And I'm a teenager now, and I had never heard her speak in this language. And I'm looking at my mom like, "Who are you? What is going on?" And her friend are having, you know, this long conversation in a language that I've never heard. And I was in awe and I was like, "What's going on?" So after that meeting, you know, she kind of told us a little bit about her past and her growing up. And she said she had always held on to her language. And as she went around the country, she would always, whenever she'd go places, she would translate in her mind every word that she could. And
wow.
It helped her remember her language. So she hadn't been back there for over 20 years. And finally, there weren't that many people left that could speak the language. When she saw someone that she knew that spoke the language, they just took off and started talking. Well, I didn't know my language. I didn't know my culture. I didn't know my heritage. I didn't know who I was. And my mom wanted me to fit in with this new association of being native, but it wasn't anything that I had ever known. She took me to powwows and she took me to different events on the reservation, trying to get me to have a love for my culture and my heritage. Growing up in the early 70s at the time, the natives had a real negative feel about who they were. Society taught, you know, and I tell people I watch on TV. I'd watch on TV and in movies, and the natives were always the bad guys. The Indians were always the bad guys in all the movies. And seeing that and watching that, I didn't want to be a native. I didn't want to be Indian. I didn't want any part of it. I didn't want the traditions. I didn't want the songs. I didn't want the dances. My mom, she said, "Come on, go to the powwows, learn to dance. I'll buy you all your regalia. I'll get you all the things that you need. I want you to embrace it. I want you to love it. I want you to have it. I want you to know who you are." But I had lived already up to that point in the world, and I didn't want to embrace who I was as a native, and so I really shunned it. And I lived in a border town, so I lived on the Tulalip Reservation, but I went into school in a town called Marysville. And at the time, there was a lot of problems that the natives had, drugs, alcohol, teen pregnancy, dropping out of school. And so when I went to the school, that was kind of seen in me by everybody else. Oh, he's another native. And so I really struggled. I played basketball, I played baseball, I played sports, but it felt like, I was kind of included, but not really. And then I would go and play with the kids on the reservation, and they didn't treat me the same because they were like, "Oh, you're just one of those white kids. You just go over there and play with the kids, in town." So I really struggled, and I was kind of in a world of my own where I didn't belong. And on top of that, I was one of the only natives that was LDS, and we didn't have a whole lot of members of the church where I grew up. And so I really struggled to identify who I was as a native and also as a member of the church. And my dad, even though he was not native, they put him in charge of the Indian seminary program on the reservation. So while I was growing up, I had early morning seminary and I had Indian seminary, which was like mutual. For the natives, we would meet once a week, and it was usually on a Tuesday or Wednesday night, and the bus would go around on the reservation and pick everybody up, and then it'd come back. And I just didn't fit in. I didn't fit in anywhere, and so I struggled to identify my roots the way my mom wanted me to, but I just didn't want any part of it. And then back in 1971, there was a in the middle of all this chaos in my life, my mother asked me one night, I think it was after basketball practice, I was really tired and I just wanted to sit and watch TV. And she asked me, will you go with me to go see this show in Seattle? It's a Native American group from BYU and it's called the Lamanite Generation, and I think you'll really like it. And I said, "Mom, I don't really want to go." She said, "Well, can you please go with me?" And I said, "Mom, I don't want to go. I'm just so tired." And so she kind of begged me. So she went back in her bedroom, she changed, she got her purse, and she came back into the front door and she said, "Will you please go with me?" And I said, "Mom, I don't want to go. I'm so tired." She said, "Go get your shoes and socks. Let's go." And she walked out. And I was like, "Oh my goodness, are you kidding? You just asked me. I don't want to go." And so I got in the car and I remember I had that attitude. I was mad. I was upset. I didn't want to go. I wasn't going to have fun. And I remember as I sat there watching this group perform, this Lamanite Generation, which had been organized in 1971. And it was, I got to see one of the first things that they really had ever done. And as the program got to the hoop dancers, the Native American hoop dancers, I had never seen a Native American hoop dance. And as three hoop dancers got up there and I was watching them in the shadows, putting down their hoops, and I didn't know what they were doing. I just saw circles up there and I was wondering, what in the world are they doing? And as the music began and as the dancers began dancing, I, for the first time, was enthralled with a Native American dance. And something happened to me that particular day. And I shunned being Native. I wanted no part of being Native. I wasn't like anybody else. I was an individual that, was different from the rest of the Native society, so I thought. And as these three dancers began dancing, my heart was opened. And in flowed a light that I had never felt and experienced to this magnitude. And I grew up in the church. My parents joined the church when I was young. I kind of had a testimony of a few things. I knew some things were right and I knew some things were wrong. And, I had grown and learned, but I had never felt anything of this magnitude. And as these dancers began dancing, I just was enthralled. And it was like a light was lit in my heart that I'd never felt. And as that light was lit, I could feel it growing as this dance progressed. And after the dance was over, I just remember standing And I was clapping and cheering. I was just like so excited. And for the first time, I felt I wanted to be native. I wanted to know who I was, and I wanted to know what that was that I was feeling. And I knew that that was something that I had to know and understand and learn. So it was probably that moment that my heart was touched and my life was changed. And there's so many things in our lives that can change by a moment, a second, a time, a year, a week, a day, that my mom insisted was amazing, and that I was touched to the magnitude that I was amazing. So when I kind of realized that something had happened, I remember going to school and in the fall talking to one of the counselors, and the counselor looked, because I had transferred from one school to another, and the school I had attended had seven classes, and the school I was attending only had six classes, I had extra credits. So the counselor called me in and said, if you only take one night class over here at the community college, you can graduate this year. And I was like, what? So I went home and I talked to my parents, and they thought it was a great idea. So that year, I gave up all my sports and everything that I was doing. I took a night class, and I graduated from high school a year early at 16 years old. So when I graduated, prior to my graduation, I applied to two schools. One was the University of Washington, and one was Brigham Young University. And so when I applied to both of them, I hadn't earned anything, and I had graduated, school was out. I had gone to a party with a girlfriend of mine, and it was a religious group that had gathered together to just have a celebration for, the end of the school year. And as I came home, I had been riding my motorcycle, and it rained all the way home. And when I got home, I was just drenched. I was actually dripping as I walked in. And as I walked in, now I'm upset, I'm cold, I'm tired. And my mom and dad, they're sitting there on the couch, and they said, "Oh, you got a letter." And I said, "I got a letter from who?" They said, "You got a letter from BYU." And I said, "Okay." And they said, "Don't you want to know what it is?" I said, "Well, what is it?" They said, "You got accepted to BYU." And I'm like, "Okay." And they said, "And you have to leave tomorrow." I said, "What? I have to leave tomorrow? What?" So I remember riding my motorcycle back to my girlfriend's house, telling her I had to leave. She agreed with me tomorrow that the next day she would ride with me, and she would take me to the airport. And when we got to the airport, families used to be able to walk people right to the gate. And after 9/11, things changed, and there's security. But prior to that, they could walk you right to the gate. And so as I walked to the gate, my mom and my sister and my girlfriend and my brothers and sisters, whoever was there, they walked me to the gate. And my mom stood there, and after she checked me in and I was ready to go, she had a bag in her hand, and she said to me, "I need you to make me a promise." And I said, "Okay." She said, "No, I need you to actually say, 'I promise.'" And I said, "What do you want me to promise?" She said, "I need you to promise me that you will go see Janie Thompson when you get to BYU." And I said, "Okay, I promise." She said, "No, will you say those words to me?" And I said, "Okay, I promise I will go see Janie Thompson, whoever she is. I'll go see her." I didn't know who she was, and she said, "Okay." And she handed me the bag. And when she handed me the bag, it's a J.C. Penney's bag, and on the inside of the bag was a pair of white jeans. And I looked at her, I'm like, "Mom, I don't wear white jeans." She said, "You're gonna need them." I said, "I don't wear them, but okay, I'll take them." So when I went to BYU, I was there for a couple weeks, and then I remembered the promise I'd made to my mom. I mean, it was instilled in my brain and in my heart, and I said, "I'm going to go do this." And so one day, my brother-in-law took me over there to meet her, and she said, as I walked in, He said, Janie, here's somebody that I want you to meet. This is my brother-in-law. His name's Terry. He's going to school at BYU. And she turned around, and I mean, I could see in her face lit up. She said, what? What? Who are you? And I said, are you going to school? I said, yeah, I just started. She goes, sit down. She goes, can you sing? I go, well, I can sing a little bit. She goes, can you sing this? And she started playing a song. And she said, can you play that? Can you sing the harmony? Can you sing this part? Can you do this? And, you know, she's checking to see if I have a voice and if I can sing. And she said, can you dance? I said, well, yeah, I think I can dance. She goes, can you dance like this? And so she stood up, and she had a little office, maybe it was by 10 by 6 or 8 feet. It was a small little office. And she said, can you snap your fingers like this and walk? And I said, yeah. And she said, can you snap and do both fingers? And I'm like, yes, I can. Can you walk it and follow me and do this? Can you go to the right and the left? And she's given me an audition, but I don't know that she's auditioning me. And she says, okay, we're going on tour in a week and a half or 2 weeks, whatever it was.
No.
Can you go with us? And I said, well, I don't know. Where are you going? She goes, we'll be gone for 8 weeks. And we're going all across the Western United States. Can you go with us? I said, well, I just started school 2 weeks ago. She goes, I'll take care of that. I just need to know if you can go. And I said, well, I just started school. She said, I just told you. I will take care of that part.
Oh.
I just need to know if you can go on tour with us for 8 weeks. And I said, well, I guess I can. She said, you can? She said, okay, the only thing that you need is a pair of white pants. Do you have any white pants? I said, yes. As a matter of fact, my mother gave me a pair of white pants. They're jeans. She goes, that's perfect. You need white jeans. She said, that's all you need is a pair of white jeans. We have everything else. So my mother didn't know Janie Thompson, and Janie Thompson didn't know my mother. But when she welcomed me, she said, I have been on my knees for 2 weeks praying for another young man that I need. And she said, I needed two young men. And there happened to be myself and another guy by the name of Tony McCabe who came, and we filled her dancer needs at that particular time. So it was probably, you know, several months later that I learned the hoop dance, but the hoop dance gave me a feeling of excitement. It made me feel proud. It made me know and feel a love for my heritage, my native heritage. But at the same time, as I performed with this group, the Lamanite Generation, it gave me a sense of value as a member of the church. As I went places, you know, I found myself standing in front of audiences, bearing my testimony. After we had been traveling for about 6 weeks, we wound up going up to an area, Mount Vernon, which is close to Tulalip. And I remember seeing my mom and my sister and my family. And at the end of every show, what we would do is they would give the microphone to an individual, and that individual would bear their testimony. And as I stood there and as I began bearing my testimony, my mom and sister were sitting on the front row. And I remember looking down. And my mom knew who I had become or who I was becoming. And as I looked down and as I saw her eyes, you know, fill with tears, I knew she had finally got me where she wanted me to be. A love for my native culture and a love for the church, which I grew up in. And now they had become one. And she knew that I had in me what she wanted to see develop. And it was something that she worked at all her life to make sure that I had that. Had I not moved to Washington, Tulalip, the whole scenario wouldn't have worked. Had my mom not had a heart attack, we never would have left Alaska. We would have stayed there. Had they never bought my brother a gun and he shot it on that day, at the exact time when my sister had got stung by a bee, she wouldn't have had a heart attack. So many things happened had I not graduated early from school, had I not seen the Lamanite generation, had so many things not fallen into place, I believe that the Lord guided my steps and he helped me to realize who I was. Yeah. And the hoop dance, I have been hoop dancing now for almost 50 years. And it has brought me a sense of who I am as a native, but it's combined my sense of purpose as a member of the church.
Yeah.
In the regalia that I wear now, there's a lot of different parts that I have put onto my regalia that tell a little bit about who I am.
Uh-huh.
I have on the front, I have a symbol that's northwest that looks like the sun to remember that, you know, it is the Son of God who has done everything for us. On the back, I have a symbol of the moon and I have the stars. So the sun and the moon and the stars are to help me to remember what my goal is and where I'm headed for. You know, I don't want the stars. I don't want the moon. I want the best. I want the sun. And I want to follow the sun. I have the plants and animals, and they're in the dance. That's to remind me of the things that the Lord has given me. The hoop dance in particular is called the circle of life. There's no beginning and no end. And that is the story of the Savior. That's the story of the Father. You know, it is from eternity to eternity. There's no beginning and there's no end. So throughout my dance and throughout my life, that's what I try to share. A lot of it is not said. A lot of it is what you have to feel.
Yeah.
And as I go from place to place and dance, that's what I try to share with people. If you can feel what I'm trying to share, then you get the message. If you see what I do, then you're seeing something that's wonderful. But it's only as you look to the spiritual part that you really feel the real change that happens. And I say, when I saw the dance, a light was lit, and that flame is eternal. And it's up to the individual to make sure that that light stays lit. And you can only share that light when you let that light go on.
Yeah.
So for me, as a young man, I learned who I was. I learned about my heritage. I put my whole life now into making sure that I share with the world who I am and who the natives are. I try to stand for them. I try to represent them. I know the things that I do, good or bad, are seen by the world. And so I try to share with the world that part that I feel can't be touched. It's got to be felt.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Where along your life's journey did you get a firm testimony of the Book of Mormon?
I can't say there's one moment. I think there's several moments that defined my testimony that included the Book of Mormon. I remember as an 8-year-old, after being baptized, and we were living in Jacksonville, Florida. And, you know, it was just a regular church. There weren't really any natives, although there was another native family there that, you know, I connected with years later and that I still know today. But I remember when I was baptized, I remember standing up as a little 8-year-old and bearing my testimony. And the feelings that I felt were incredible. And it was the beginning of a journey that I think is ongoing throughout my life. So as a little 8-year-old, I knew that I had found truth. And I had felt the Spirit and I had felt the goodness that the Spirit can bring. And so as a little 8-year-old, that's kind of where my testimony began. Growing up on the reservation in Tulalip, trying to figure out who I was and the importance of the Book of Mormon, I think I began understanding that in the Book of Mormon, I was a Lamanite. And over and over and over, it just kept telling me just what the world was saying. You know, the Lamanites weren't good. They were the bad people. They were, you know, and I struggled with that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I joined the Lamanite generation, I began to see the people who were like me. I saw Lamanites sharing their testimony, and I remember them, you know, giving me their insight and helping me to understand who the Lamanites were, and that the blood of Israel, you know, ran through our veins, and that knowing and understanding that and standing for the right, my testimony began to grow about what the Book of Mormon was all about. And as a missionary, I served in Pennsylvania for 2 years, and some incredible things happened as a missionary to build my testimony and help me understand the importance of the Book of Mormon. I met my wife, who is a Lumbee native from North Carolina, and her father was a Methodist minister, and she has an identical twin sister. Mm-hmm. And her identical twin sister became Miss Utah. I think it was 1980.
Wow.
She was Miss Utah. But my wife is the only one that joined the church. And her dad was a Methodist minister, kind of like a stake president in our church.
Uh-huh.
And so explaining to her the importance of the Book of Mormon and what the Book of Mormon was kind of opened my eyes to its importance. Understanding who the Lamanites were, understanding who the natives are. And so over the years, as I've done studies, I've read the Book of Mormon as a native, not as an individual, but asking myself, where does my culture come from out of the Book of Mormon? And I found so many things that align with who the natives are that match perfectly with where we got the things that we got over time, and identify who my native ancestors are and where my roots come from. So I'd have to say, you know, my testimony of the Book of Mormon continues to grow. Several years ago, probably 6-7 years ago, I decided that I was a little stagnant in my reading and my studying of the scriptures. And I taught seminary for 8 years, early morning seminary, and that really opened my eyes and helped me understand the Book of Mormon. But after I had finished teaching, I decided I needed to do more in reading my scriptures. And because of my dancing, I run every day, except for Sunday, 3 miles. And I've been doing that for many years. And I decided I would make a little change. And rather than listening to my rock music that I loved, I would start listening to the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
And so every day I listened to my scriptures. And last year, in the Come Follow Me was the Book of Mormon. And I would listen to the Book of Mormon over and over and over. For a year, I probably read through the Book of Mormon 10 times.
Wow.
You know, I would start and finish and start, and wherever it was at, I would continue from there, and I would just keep on listening and keep on listening. And I'd go back every week and I would listen and listen, and I'd go back. And I think my testimony has grown over the years in steps. I know the Book of Mormon is true. It leads my life, and it is everything to me. And I can't say, although when I was with the Lamanite generation, in probably the first 4 weeks, I saw these people and I saw their testimonies, and I'm like, okay, I don't have a testimony. How do I get the testimony that they have? And I remember one night praying while we were on tour, and I was in a room by myself, and I got on my knees and I prayed and I said, okay, I have to know. I can't do this not knowing. I have to know. And as I prayed, you know, I prayed, and then I got up and I read a little and I prayed again. And I said, you know, if you could send me Moroni or Joseph Smith or Mormon, or you send me anybody, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know, I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, and I just said, okay, I'm going to pray one more time. And if I don't get my answer, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I can't do this anymore. And so I opened my scriptures. I happen to have some scriptures, and I opened my scriptures, and it's one of the scriptures that we're studying now. And it's, behold, you have not understood. You have supposed I would give it unto you when you took no thought, save it was to ask me. But behold, I say unto you that you must study it out in your mind, and then you must ask me if it be right. And if it is right, I will cause that your bosom shall burn within you. Therefore you shall feel that it is right. But if it be not right, you shall have no such feeling, but you shall have a stupor of thought. And it was like the book was speaking to me.
It was.
And it was. Yes, it was. And it was like, oh my goodness, I'm sorry. I know. So I think over time, my testimony has grown in steps. And those are probably some of the defining moments that have touched my heart to know that the Book of Mormon is true. So I'd have to say there's several parts to it that let me know that the Book of Mormon is true.
Yeah. What is a tender mercy that you've received lately, just that let you know that Heavenly Father is still watching out for you?
My wife and her twin sister and her sister's husband and I were in California just before Christmas when they received a call from North Carolina, where my wife and her sister grew up and where her parents are. When they called, somebody called them and said that the 24-hour-a-day workers that were supposed to be there at Christmas were not available, and there would be no workers at their house to take care of their parents. So we were all in my truck, and we were in California, and right then it was decided, okay, they decided, we have to go right now. We got to leave tomorrow. We're going to pack and we're going to leave. And my wife and I had already packed and we were in California, but my truck was in California and I had to take it back to Utah. I said, well, you go out there to North Carolina and I'll go to Utah and I'll gather with the family there. And then I'll meet you out in North Carolina. So Monday I got tested and I found out on Wednesday that I was negative. And Thursday, I flew out there, and I got out there, and just before, while I was on my way out there, they called up and said, Joan said, Jean is sick. She's been sick all day. And I said, well, there's probably the stomach flu. It's probably going around. I got there, and the day after I got there, my wife was sick. And the day after she got sick, I was sick.
Oh.
And the day after I was sick, her parents got sick. So we decided we better go get tested. So that Monday we got tested, and Tuesday we found out we were all positive.
Oh, no.
With COVID. So we have three 63-year-olds, a 65-year-old, an 85, oh, and an 89, and the 85-year-old is totally helpless, can do nothing. So you have four adults taking care of, you know, two of the elderly and trying to figure out, and everybody now has COVID.
Wow.
And we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. And I remember saying, I think this is the Lord's blessing to us to take care of us. I said, if I would have tested positive, I couldn't have come out. Each one of us had been sick a different day, and none of us were ever sick on the same day together.
Yeah.
And I believe it was the Lord's way of putting us together and helping us to help each other. And I just see the Lord's hand in every part of that, in helping us heal and helping us get through the illness. Nobody got deathly ill. We all had sick days, but nobody was deathly ill.
Mm-hmm.
We think that one of the workers brought it in, and we probably had the same strand that they had. Yet, the Lord, in his tender mercy, put us all together, and the six of us experienced COVID together.
Yeah.
So I believe that the Lord does extend tender mercies. Why? I don't know. Why were we blessed? I don't know. I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for the experience. It wasn't fun. It's just one of those things that the Lord, after we were done, you know, I kept saying, the Lord has blessed us. more than we can ever try to thank him or give him back in any way.
Yeah, thank you. I definitely would say that would be a tender mercy, a strange tender mercy, and yet a definite tender mercy.
Yes.
My final question is, what does it mean to you to know that you are of the tribe of Israel?
Being a seminary teacher, having taught seminary for 8 years, it gave me a chance to go through the scriptures, the Old Testament, the New Testament, Doctrine and Covenants, Pearl of Great Price, the Book of Mormon. And I only think that as you understand all the scriptures together, that you can really understand who you are as being a part of the tribe of Israel. Because it's in the Old Testament that we understand who Joseph is, and we are the tribe of Joseph. And you have to understand that there's 12 tribes of Israel, and we are only one of those 12 tribes. And everybody has blessings, and all those blessings are given in Genesis 49. And in Genesis 49, each tribe is told what their blessings are. And Joseph's blessing is that it will be a fruitful bough by a well, and that it will go over the well. And, you know, it's kind of like, wait, how does that happen? Then as you understand through the Book of Mormon, how the tribe of Joseph, and they're identified as a tribe of Joseph through the Book of Mormon, how they go over the wall. The wall is really the ocean, and how they leave and go over the wall, understanding who we are as a tribe of Joseph doesn't just mean that, you know, we're a select group. We are one of the 12 tribes. And the Book of Mormon, from the beginning to the end, we're told that the Book of Mormon is written to the Lamanites, to the tribe of Joseph. And understanding that I am the tribe of Joseph, it's my responsibility to stand tall and to act accordingly and share with the world who I am and who all of us are. We're all children of God. We're all of those tribes of the 12 tribes of Israel. And I happen to be of the tribe of Joseph. You know, in Joseph, you have Ephraim and you have Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh are the sons of Joseph. In my patriarchal blessing, it tells me I am of the tribe of Joseph. It doesn't say Ephraim or Manasseh. It says I am the tribe of Joseph. So understanding that there's responsibilities that each one of us have, depending on which tribe we come from, but to share with the world our testimonies, to testify that God lives, that Jesus Christ is his son, that he came here, and that he gave his life so all of us could return to our Heavenly Father again. It's our responsibility, understanding that we are one of the 12 tribes. We are the tribe of Joseph, and it is our responsibility to share with the world our testimony that the Book of Mormon is true, and that is our heritage, and that is where we come from. And it's a grand message being shared by a grand group of people, and the Lamanites are now more and more beginning to share their testimonies as a tribe of Joseph to the world in their own language, in their own form, in their dances, in their song, and people are beginning to notice that it is unique. And so for me, understanding who I am, it's a great responsibility to make sure my children and my grandchildren know our heritage is wonderful. It's grand. There's wonderful songs and dances and languages, but our testimony of Jesus Christ is the ultimate thing that we have, which is greater than anything else that we could possess.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. I've really appreciated this time. It's been fun, and I am thankful for your testimony. Thank you, Brother Godel. So, as I mentioned before, Terry just seems still to have so much enthusiasm. I mean, for him to run 3 miles a day, he just has so much enthusiasm about life. And I have since friended him on Facebook, and I've watched
some of his posts. And he is so happy to be a grandfather. He's so happy to just be alive and to be doing good in this world and watching other people do good in this world. So I've been thinking about that, about his gift of the spirit, which is enthusiasm. His being a willing instrument in the Lord's hand, that's a gift of the spirit. His ability to bear his testimony, that's a gift of the spirit. So I've just been thinking about that, and I've been thinking about the other guests that we've had on this podcast and some of their gifts of the spirit. And I've been thinking about my friends near and far, those in my ward, those I've known for a long, long time, those I've known for a short time, and their gifts of the spirit. And I am so grateful that we all have different gifts of the spirit. And it's been something I've been watching the past week and a half. I've been really grateful for it. I'm so thankful for Terry Goodell and for his time and all the things that he shared with us. I'd like to talk for just a second about the podcast. The podcast is on so many different podcast directories: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. There are others. I'm on those. So if you want to look for me on those, great. I also wanted to say that I am looking for guests. I'm looking for grandparents. I'm looking for young single adults. I'm looking for recently returned missionaries. I would love to have a young man who is a recently returned missionary come and tell some of his testimony. I just hope you all have a super wonderful, awesome day.
Tribe of Testimonies is not affiliated with The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The music is a traditional hymn, "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing," arranged and performed by Kyle Forsyth. If you know someone who might be interested in being a guest, please reach out to me at tribeoftestimonies@gmail.com.